You're listening to Ministry Profiles, Episode 1, Homes Devoted. I am your host for this episode, Jonathan Dennison. Ministry Profiles seeks the who and how of Christian ministry beyond the church campus. In this episode, we talk with Jonathan and Carrie Cronkite to learn about their Homes Devoted family ministry. We hear their passion for bringing faith sharing back into the home and how they are managing this ministry financially and with accountability as a full-time endeavor. While the primary medium of Ministry Profiles is audio, we are also documenting the interview and the ministry through photography. Visit ministryprofiles.org/homesdevoted to see the photo gallery along with show notes and links to learn more about this incredible ministry. Today's episode brings us into the living room of the husband and wife team who has carried the message of faith at home to families, churches, and organizations all over the United States and beyond. Their ministry is called Homes Devoted. They have made this ministry a full-time endeavor, even quitting a full-time job as a youth pastor for the last 20 years to take the message on the road. There's a lot we can learn from a family who has made ministry a full-time career. Jonathan and Carrie Cronkite, welcome to Ministry Profiles.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having us. It's exciting to be a part of this.
Great. Thank you. So there are plenty of listeners who have been feeling God's tug to pursue a ministry of their own, and many who believe God is calling them to make it the full-time job. But it's so intimidating to even consider that. So the first question we would want to know is, what is so special about the message of Homes Devoted that made you risk everything to take the plunge into the ministry full time?
Well, it's the message, the message, the urgency that parents right now are raising a generation to know, or maybe not know, the Lord. In 20 years of ministry, I discovered the common denominator in kids that had a faith that lasted was that they had parents who authentically and intentionally lived their faith out at home in between Sundays. So as a youth pastor, I discover this message. I discover the importance of faith at home. And then I also discover all the stats that come out that say that parents are not doing this at home. George Barna came out with a study that less than 10% of church parents are doing anything at home spiritually other than a mealtime prayer. Less than 10%. And yet, you know, so 90% aren't doing anything, and close to 90% of kids in our churches today are walking away from the faith. So the urgency of the message, discovering that on my own, seeing and hearing all the stats that were coming out, just God putting this burden in my heart and my soul to reach teenagers. Well, in order to do that, we need to reach parents. And the fact that so many parents are not hearing this message of the importance of their role in between Sundays of impressing faith, living out Deuteronomy 6 in their home. Deuteronomy 6, verse 5, you know, God, we all know this verse, you know, love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Verse 6, God says, well, these commands are to be upon your hearts, parents, leaders, elders. And then verse 7 says, and it, you know, God's like, if you want to impress the next generation with a faith at last, if you want the next generation, you want your children, your grandchildren to know me and to know my ways and to know my love, then here's verse 7, impress these on your children, God says, when you sit at home, when you rise, when you go to bed, when you're walking down the road. I mean, it's at home, it's in between Sundays, it's living faith out, it's doing life together and bringing God in the midst of it. The urgency is really in the message that so many parents are not hearing this and they're not doing it, and we are losing the majority of kids growing up in most churches, not only in America, but around the world.
John Maxwell has a book that's called Holy Discontent. And I think of that when I think of you, is that you had this burning passion, this extreme discontentment with the way things were going, and you had to do something about it. And I think in each one of us, you know, we have from God a ministry and a passion that we must, you know, do. We have to serve in this way. And it just so happens that in order to accomplish what the Lord has put on your heart to do, you really need to attack this with full-time effort and work. And it certainly is a big you know, project to undertake and requires your entire devotion. But I think ultimately you just had a holy discontent.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so we've got to have children's ministries and we've got to have youth ministries, but they've got to serve parents as well as the children and youth that attend their programs. We've got to change the mentality of the parents to let them know that we can't outsource anymore. They can't just drop off their kids. They need to be intentionally involved, spiritually discipling their own children at home so that we can have a children's ministry and a youth ministry every day of the week. It just doesn't happen at church. It happens in the home. I mean, and my friend and mentor, Rob Reno, says that God created the family to be a discipleship center. God created that with faith, you know, impressing faith in mind. God created families to be discipleship centers. And so it's the urgency of the message that we've got to do things differently, or we're going to continue to get the results that we have. So,
would you say that then Homes Devoted is kind of like where you've got youth ministry, and now you have parents ministry?
Really the term family ministry has been big, and maybe that's synonymous. But parent ministry, there definitely needs to be a focus, needs to be an emphasis on parents to impact the family
and grandparents. I think there's a lot of grandparents out there that are the only spiritual, you know, in a positive sense.
And there's a lot of grandparents raising their grandchildren.
Yes, that too. And so we need to help the grandparents too, because a lot of them are struggling, you know, with the boundaries that they don't want to cross with the parents and what's too much or too little. And so there's a specific need there for the grandparents as well as parents.
So it sounds like a real challenge, though, to me at least, to convince the church as a whole, to convince parents in specific, that they need to do more than they're doing now. That you can't just pass your kids off to the church and they'll get everything they need and you go about your day. I mean, it's the way we live our life in what is now a post-Christian culture. Yeah, you don't think about faith at home. Faith is at the church, and that's got to change. It seems like a big challenge to convince them of this. How do you go about that? Is that simple, or is it going to take some work? And yeah, there's a dog in the room. It's part of the family.
We challenge and ask parents, what is the greatest goal? I mean, when we are talking about raising our children, when we are believers and we want to raise godly children, what is the greatest goal? The greatest goal is to raise kids who love a great God. David Platt says it something like this, that our greatest goal is not to so that our kids have a great education, get a great GPA, get into that great college, a great career, great wife, great spouse, a great retirement. It's that they fall in love with a great God. I mean, that is our ultimate goal. Homes Devoted, we want to encourage, we want to help parents introduce, impart, impress faith on their kids. We want them to introduce their hearts, to lead their kids' hearts to God's hearts. And if they will fall in love with God, if they will grow up when they see God at work, they won't help but be able to fall in love with that God and live for Him and serve for Him and serve Him. I mean, that we want kids to connect with God's heart.
You know, parents, their biggest regret, you know, when we talk to grandparents and they're looking back on their years with their children at home, it's not that they wish that they spent more time and money, you know, investing in programs, you know, that their children would be involved in. Their biggest regret is that they didn't spend more time connecting and spending time together as a family. And so if we can use the wisdom, you know, that they have gleaned and apply it while our children are still at home and young, you know, like Jonathan said, the goal is to connect with our children, to have their hearts. And then when we do, we can entrust their hearts to the Lord. And so really our job is loving God and loving those kids that God has entrusted into our care.
That's a lot. And at the same time, it's such a simple message. What does Homes Devoted do to get that message out there?
One thing we do is one-day workshops, parenting seminars. We come into a church and, you know, and really want to invest in their parents and grandparents. And we do one-time workshops. We also partner with churches. You know, family ministry is such a need, and we're seeing it and hearing about it over and over and over again. And so with a, you know, with a children's pastor and a youth pastor and other pastors, often churches don't have the resources and the funds to hire another staff person to come in and be a family pastor. Well, we want to, and we partner with churches to kind of fill in that gap so that we can lead workshops, we can come alongside churches, come alongside staff, and help their parents really get a grasp of praying together in their homes, praying together, whether they have, you know, a three-year-old or a teenager. How can they at home say more than just a mealtime prayer? How can they search the heart of God at home? And what do devotions look like and how long? And so we come alongside to really help parents, you know, figure all these things out. We're living it. We're in the midst of it. We have five children, ages almost 3 to 16 years old. And we're trying, we're in this with them. And so it is an incredible opportunity, and we really enjoy sharing our ups and our downs and our struggles and what's worked to really help families seek the heart of God at home.
How often do you do these lectures? Is this your primary means of doing your ministry, or what is the main source you get your information out there? How often are you on the road? You take your family with you, or is it just sometimes just one of you? Or
I guess it's all of the above. Yeah, I mean, right? I mean, it's whatever the church situation. You know, we, a couple months ago, one of my daughters, Sophia, and I, you know, flew to New Jersey to do an all day workshop. And some churches want us to come in once a month and have some longevity, build relationships, be there from month to month so that we can do a workshop on the greatest goal and then a month later challenge them on how they did that week. We can then talk about praying in the home, going through a step by step, and how do we pray together and what obstacles are there and what are they going to face. And then that next month they attempt and they really try to make prayer a part of their family life. And so then we come back and we're able to answer questions and to help them work through those things. And same with devotions and talking about purity. So once a month workshops, one-time workshops, all-day things. And then there's also our website, emails, and text messages that we send encouraging stuff to once a week as well.
And we've led family retreats as well, and the entire family goes on that, and it's really great fun, and I think it really helps the families that we're ministering to see that we are a normal family, you know, and that we're in there with them, and so they get to see us parenting our children, and our children also get the opportunity to serve, which we really enjoy. As a whole family unit, being involved in the ministry together, because each of our children are gifted and have different strengths, and they all fit into some part of the ministry where they can serve and God can be glorified in it. And, you know, so the family retreats are great fun, and the kids help us to know what's, you know, going to go over well with the young people that are going to be on the family retreats and what really wouldn't go over well. So we appreciate our kids helping us out in the ministry as well.
Have you always kind of functioned this way, or is this kind of something you built on over time? What was their response to, hey, we're just going to do ministry full time and dad's going to quit his day job? And how do you feel about this? Ready to go? Or how was that received when you announced that shift in life and work?
I think we've always been, and I've always been able to trust where the Lord was leading us, because Jonathan would spend a whole lot of time praying. And so whenever the Lord led him somewhere, I had great confidence that it was God leading him and that he would take good care of us. As far as our family, when the children were young, we had no clue really what to do with them. I mean, our oldest daughter, when we brought her home from the hospital, we're like, I can't believe they sent her home with us. Because we felt so ill-equipped, and we're reading instructions on how to give her a bath, and we're messing up. And so when we were expecting our second, I went to the pastor, and I'm like, I need help. I need a mentor. I need a wiser woman to show me how to do this well. You know, before our children can even understand who God is and the relationship that they can have with him and the relationship that we have with him, we want our children's hearts to be softened and to be nurtured to love God. And we do that from the time that they're infants, you know, singing to them and praying with them and just sharing what God is doing actively in our lives.
So yeah, we did not always know how to do this. We both wanted, Carrie and I both wanted to make sure we raised our kids, you know, in an atmosphere, in a home that had God first, that sought God in everything, that made God a priority, you know, because that's what we wanted. And so we kind of, you know, like most things, most people kind of figured this out as we went. And, you know, like Carrie said, reading books and asking, you know, older, wiser people who have been through it. And so we were just living this out. But then through this journey of being in youth ministry and discovering that so many parents were not doing this at home. I mean, I took advantage of the fact that I thought, you know, people in the church were all doing this. I mean, they've been in the church for years, maybe even more than Carrie and I. And so surely they knew what they needed to do as Christian godly parents in raising kids. But we discovered that just wasn't happening. And it just put a burden in our hearts to help encourage parents to make God a priority at home. So
you made your family the prototype Well, for what a Holmes devoted family would be like.
Wow.
I don't know about that.
We're still working on it. I'd go that far.
By a prototype, you're testing it out, right? You're coming up with the methods. You're coming up with these prayer stones that I've heard about, and that sounds really cool. I mean, you're coming up with methods to share with other families.
Yeah. Yeah, we have not arrived for sure.
Prototypes are full of errors and mistakes that you learn from, right?
Yeah. Right.
They're not a perfect system, obviously, or else they wouldn't be a prototype.
No, it's fun, though. And I think when you have a sense of fun in your home and adventure, then the kids can roll with it a little better. And because you had brought up how did the kids respond. You know, they're used to us dropping everything, you know, and going in the way that the Lord leads us, no matter how crazy it might seem to other people. We just truly want to do His will. And so I don't think any of them were really shocked but our oldest daughter was definitely concerned because I think she was older and she's like, how are we going to live? But that's just another really cool way that we've been able to demonstrate God's love for us, is that He cares so much about us that He provides for us. And sometimes it really does amaze us. That we're able to carry on, but He obviously is blessing the ministry and our work and continues to support us. So we're thankful for that.
And that is something that a lot of people are going to want to know, you know, especially you're doing ministry full time, and she realized it. How does that happen? How is it that you're able to do ministry full time? Where is the finances coming from?
Well, we are truly amazed at what God has done and how God has put us in a position to know people, to be introduced to people, to really have that one-on-one connection, to share the vision, to share the need, and the mission. And it really has been one-on-one. If you want to get specific, you know, you can send thousands of letters out there, but that isn't the key. The key is asking one-on-one, having relationships with people who know you, who trust you, who understand really the ministry, the vision of the ministry and the need, and that they want to come alongside and be a part of what God is doing. This is a huge, incredible movement happening really in the world, not just in America, but it's happening globally. And to be a part of that, and they, you know, pastors, parents, grandparents especially, can see the need and can see the reason why this is so important. And mostly it's because, you know, so many of them wish they had done more. You know, when it comes to spiritually developing their children, spiritually discipling their children, so they see the need, and we're at a point in really Christendom where we can see the results of what has happened, and so we've got to turn really our hearts back toward the Lord and toward our home and toward our children.
And I, with our children, I like to read the YWAM books about the missionaries and their stories. And, you know, so we've read George Mueller and Lillian Trasher and Amy Carmichael. And as we're reading about Brother Andrew right now and his mission work and the way that they operated by faith and the way that the Lord provided for them in sometimes unusual ways. And we've had it happen too, where we would find out that we're losing support, you know, from a donor, and we're thinking, oh no, you know, and we one time we're on the driveway and we're praying and talking about it and saying, what should we say to the kids? And at that very moment, while we are standing in our driveway, the mailman comes and puts in the mail a check from somebody new that had never given us money before, and it was actually a little more than what the person who had stopped donating towards us had given us. And so we just, instead of coming in with bad news, we were able to come in rejoicing and praising God. And his timing is unbelievable. And it happens over and over again. So even when we ourselves start wondering and having doubts about, okay, is this really what the Lord wants us to be doing? Something happens and we're flooded with an unusual blessing and an unexpected blessing. And so we give the glory to God in everything.
So you're saying, you mentioned the word donors. So does most of the finances come in through specific donors who want to connect and support your ministry? Or is it a combination of donors and churches and some organization that's giving?
It is.
How does all that happen? There's other people that this is their biggest concern. They want to do ministry. God is putting something on their heart. Tell them. How does it work? How does it happen?
Well, it is through individual donors, through churches, and I guess they would fall under the line of donors, but there's been some year-end contributions, you know, where foundations want to give in, you know, in a large amount. And so all those working together, God has really provided.
How do you go about requesting that, or is it they come to you after hearing about your ministry?
Yeah, that doesn't really happen. It doesn't happen so much where they're, you know, people are just sitting around wondering where they can give their money to and then pick up the phone and call us. It is a you know, it's humbling in one sense, but yeah, God has given us this call and this mission, and it happens by one-on-one meeting with people and sharing the vision. That is the majority, I mean, of the funding is sharing the opportunity for them to participate in really changing churches, changing homes, changing the next generation for the Lord.
And I think, like we said before, I think the grandparents are the ones who get it more than even the parents get it, because they're looking back and many of them do have regrets about the way that they invested their time and their energy with their children. And they wish they had spent more time nurturing the spiritual development of their children instead of outsourcing it, or just thinking it'll be okay, or just let them work it out. They have regrets and they want to invest in this next generation as believers, because we are the body of Christ and we care about one another. And so they bring a lot of wisdom, you know, to all of us. One of the things that I think is really holding us back as the church in raising the next generation of children to love and serve the Lord is a facade that we like to have as parents, that everything's okay. I think a lot of times parents are putting on their smiley face, you know, when they get into church, and, you know, they might have had an awful morning. And yet when we're coming into church, we're all coming in to that building when we meet together as people who need refreshing, as people who need the Lord. We're all sinners. We all fall short. And even as parents, we do. And yet sometimes I think the temptation is to act like we have it all together and to act like everything is A-okay. And what happens is the issues, the sores fester and grow and build up in our relationships, and where we should be able to help one another out, you know, by answering, how are you doing, honestly with each other, taking the time to really pray for one another. I mean, every day as a parent can be a trial. It can be a challenge. And when we don't support one another as believers and don't encourage one another and don't feel like we can be real and honest with each other, then we're hurting we're hurting the body, you know, by just covering up those wounds instead of allowing them to be taken care of.
So a big part of creating a home devoted is community. It's not just the husband and wife just trying to tank along and take the family with them. It's arm in arm with other families and with their church.
Totally. And when you have accountability, and that's why it's great to be in life groups or home groups with other parents and really intentionally discipling your children and talking about it and sharing, you know, where you're struggling and the when you've had setbacks, and yet having somebody say, you know, you can do it, you know, have you tried this? You know, what about this? You know, running the race together. God never intended for us to parent solo. He put us in communities, as families, as neighbors, as the body. He wants us to come together, you know, for the edification of the body. And a big part of the body is the family. And when we have healthy families in the church, then we have a healthy future for our church. And so more time and energy, I think, needs to be invested in the family and in encouraging and equipping and edifying the family and allowing parents to be vulnerable and express concerns when they have them so that they can be remedied and prayed for.
Was there a turning point for you that you just said, I've got to do this. I can't keep going like this. I've got to do this.
Well, there definitely was a point where I said, okay, if I continue to do what I'm doing with the assumption that parents were doing what I thought they were doing in the home, right? That if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm gonna continue to be ineffective at reaching the majority of teenagers that I'm pouring my life into, that I'm loving and caring about and doing retreats and mission trips and discipling, that I'm gonna continue because that's the way that's what I've saw for 15, then 17, then 18, 19 years until I got to the point where I said, okay, we need to have youth ministry, but there needs to be a focus on parents. So how do we take a youth ministry and really share this vision with parents and really get parents involved so that they understand that it's not just, the youth pastor or the youth leader's job or the children's leader's job or the Sunday school teacher's job and role to disciple, their kids. So it was definitely that turning point when I discovered this all on my own, through trying to figure out, what do I need to do to be the most effective youth pastor? I mean, that was really what I sought, to develop kids that had a faith that lasted. But then I realized, the most effective thing I can do is to help parents. Make their home, as Rob Reno says, discipleship centers. So it was in that period of time when I discovered that that I started focusing on parents as well as the youth ministry. But God, God just really put it on my heart to do that in a larger scale and a more focused emphasis.
So when you decided that you were going to start moving on this plan for ministry, and like you mentioned earlier, you talked to some family and tried to help them understand the idea, who did you go to next to find support, encouragement, guidance? Who was the next step?
Well, after I kind of figured this out. I actually went to other youth pastors that I had been meeting with for years on a weekly basis. Some guys in the Melbourne area, Doug Malden, Shannon England, and said, guys, this is what I've discovered, and I just want to know, am I, off base here? I mean, so I just flat out asked them, the kids that have a faith that lasts, and what do you think are the majority of their parents, Christ followers at home, living their faith out at home, being intentional, having faith conversations. And they both said without a doubt that the majority of those kids grow up having an authentic faith themselves. So it was them. And then I went to a conference, and Jim Burns pointed me towards a book. I attended a like 8-hour workshop with Dr. Jim Burns, and it was all on family ministry. And then he pointed me to a book by Mark Holman, and then with George Barna and all these stats coming out, all talked about the home and what was happening in the home and what wasn't happening in the home and the results that the church as a whole was facing.
You went to the pastor too. I mean, I remember you, really addressing it with the pastors and even elders, in the church, about your insight and your concerns, for the way things were going, because you felt like there needed to be more emphasis, on the relationships in the home and the parents and the children together and not just separately.
How does a ministry, in this case Homes Devoted, find accountability? Where does that come from? I mean, a ministry that you do, as a full-time thing obviously isn't a standalone endeavor. Where do you find accountability to keep going and to keep going in the right direction, to be guiding other people in the right direction?
Well, our first and foremost, our accountability, is our board of directors.
And you can see them over on homesdevoted.com, correct?
Yes, yes. So you can contact them. But I mean, that's who really I am accountable to, and in terms of the direction of the ministry and that sort of thing. So they're an advisory group, and they're a help to the ministry. Other than that, our people on our advisory group and our advisory board, and then other people in the ministry that I allow myself the opportunity to ask questions, to come before them and see what they think, get their opinions in terms of resources, visions, and the future and stuff like that.
And I think really, Jonathan and I had talked about this not too long ago, but the Lord has something to say about missionaries and how they're sent. And I think that it's important to be sent by your church. And, Jonathan had said before you even start in a ministry, you need to have that confirmation from your fellow believers and making sure that they see that you're gifted in the area where you think you are. And if you don't get that resounding yes from your fellow believers, then you should definitely be concerned about that. But being sent by a church, I think, is affirming and also provides that accountability. And for us, at first, after leaving the full-time, ministry to a specific church, we were bouncing around to so many churches, to serve and to do the church partnerships and to just equip the churches in general, going from many different styles of churches and denominations of churches. And at first that was really exciting and interesting to see how, different churches were run and such. But over time, you get tired of it. you want a home church and you want your kids to have the relationships and you want the accountability and the the fellowship, with believers, because it's not, that's what the Lord wants us to have, is the relationships and the accountability with other believers, so that we can, press on toward the goal with our fellow Christians.
Are there any mentors or inspirations that you look at when thinking about running homes devoted, people that you look to kind of help you move forward, to guide you, to give you ideas?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are definitely people. I mean, there's Mark Holman, Rob Reno, who's a great friend and mentor. He's such a great guy. I can call him up, email him, text him, and he's always willing. He's actually on our advisory board, but he is always willing to give his input and advice. And it's been fun making this journey with him, and for him to be asking, things of me as well. So there's definitely a handful of people, Josh Griffin and other people in this Faith at Home movement as well.
Well, and some folks that we've met through the years, like in our church, Fred and Belinda Jorgensen have been a huge help to us throughout the years as we've looked into and sought after, growing the ministry and pursuing the ministry. I mean, I guess
And
everybody on the board, Peggy Johnson, has been a wonderful support to us.
Hoyt Byram, Brent Wente, Chris Bowers, these are all guys on all people on our board. Fred and Belinda Jorgensen, just an incredible family, raised, four incredible kids, and so we look up to them, often for wisdom. I keep telling them they should write a book, on how they did it, and they are just so humble. But they've done it, they've lived it, and it's neat to see the fruit of raising kids with discipline, with integrity, who really love the Lord.
Where do you see your ministry going? What are the next steps for Homes Devoted?
Well, we are still, Homes Devoted is still a baby. Being only 2 years old. So we are right now sort of, anything is open and available. We want to continue with church partnerships. We want to continue in producing material that churches can use. That's one next step. We're in the process of right now putting together, developing a infant child, toddler activity Bible to be able to provide resources for parents, so that children from, such an early age can love their Bible. And then there's prayer pebbles that you had mentioned earlier, and really being a resource for other churches and pastors. We want, again, we're still in the infancy stage of all this. And so we want to continue doing more workshops and doing more all day seminars to equip parents and to come alongside churches.
And equipping the children's ministers and the youth pastors with the resources to do it themselves, because one of the obstacles that we've come across is that people don't want to gather as much anymore in the person-to-person, and finding a time where the parents of a church can get together in order to do the classes is a bit of a struggle. So bringing it, like we were just talking about, making it a ministry of the church, where there's even into small groups or home groups, life groups, where the a facilitator can use our materials but do it at a time where they regularly meet at the or for their convenience, when they normally get together. We think that that's going to be a much more effective means of getting the message out there, is through almost delegates, that are going to be sharing the message instead of us necessarily traveling and getting to places. As much as we love doing that, we'd rather get the message out to more people quicker, because children do grow up so fast, and every moment is so valuable and precious that even though it's only been 2 years, a lot can happen in the life of a child in 2 years. And so we want to make sure that parents are aware that it's important to invest in the spiritual development of your child, and it is the responsibility and the privilege and the blessing for the parent to be able to do that. And they don't need to feel ill-equipped or inadequate, but they have the support and the encouragement that they need.
Now, Ministry Profiles is an audio podcast. So on our website, on the show notes, there will be photos that you can see of, a little bit of what Homes Devoted is like, as well as links to their website and to their videos. But what I want to ask you guys, being that this is an audio podcast, what does a Home Devoted sound like? What is unique about a Home Devoted?
So many thoughts are coming across my mind, like shouting, do your chores and clean the dishes, and we have our 4-room cleanup, in the morning. What do you mean you can't find your shoes? So there are all those things which are probably typical of most homes. I think, some of the sound bites of a home devoted are, prayer time at meals, prayer time together as a family, reading the word together as a family, and right up there as important, one of the most important things is having faith conversations. Whether you're doing chores or fixing the bike or riding in the car or having a meal, but bringing God into the conversation. So something happens, at school, or something happens with a friend, or there was, this scene in the movie, and how do you talk about God in those situations, so simply asking questions, what spiritual elements did you see in that movie? Now, it may be a deep question, for a 6-year-old, but you could say, what did you think that person said, or when, so-and-so said this, why was that so bad? Or what does the Bible say about that? So given all these, it's just real life examples, real life situations that I think is huge when it comes to instilling faith in our kids and making God real, in our day-to-day living. And Sticky Faith by Fuller Youth Institute did a survey, and they came up with the college kids who had a faith that lasted. One of the things that they said, 20% of them attributed it to faith conversations in the home. Faith conversations. And then the other thing was actually conversations with 5 different people. So having faith connections and having 5 different people invest in our children. So when you talked earlier about, the body, and about doing this together and doing it in community, those things. So I think that those are the sound bites I think that you would hear is God coming up into conversations as we're just doing life together.
And especially like with a teenage daughter, or I have two teenage daughters now, you know, I've had
We
to,
do. We do
we
together.
do together.
Yeah.
Anyways, but I've had to work at not reacting or overacting to things that they share, you know, with me, maybe things that their friends are doing or talking about or anything. I have to, you know, count to three, you know, before I say anything, and then try to throw a question back, you know, before I express, you know, my opinion or concern over something, because I think it's important to continue to build trust, you know, in your relationship with your teens as they're beginning to manipulate through their own values and what the word of God implanted in their heart, how it's going to manifest itself in their life. You know, we want to help them to reveal that and to use that on their own without us having to direct them. And so that's been a challenge, but it's proving to be fruitful because we do have great conversations with our teenagers, which is a blessing.
So if someone was starting to feel a call that, you know, God was saying, you need to take what's on your heart and you need to run with it. And you had a chance to sit down with them and coach them one-on-one. What kind of things would you tell them? How would you encourage them? What direction would you give them when they're coming and saying, I need to do this. I know I need to do this. Where do I start?
Well, there are many different, I'd have to make a list, but, and so this is not prioritizing, but, you know, obviously, you know, well, have you prayed about this? And probably one of the highest would be, okay, what people around that you have surrounded yourself with know all about this, have prayed with you and confirmed that, A, this is a mission God wants you to go on, and B, you are the man or woman for this mission. People who really know you, who can say, who can confirm with you. And that was one thing that I could say, you know, to our oldest daughter who was struggling with all this when we had decided to step out in faith. You know, I could say, you know, not only do I sense God calling us to do that, but the people around us, you know, the people you know, have also confirmed that for us. So there's that aspect. And then obviously there's the family out, you know, if you're married, does your spouse, you know, join you? Are they one with you in this vision? How is all that working out? You know, and then, okay, well, if you want to talk nitty gritty, you know, so, okay, so who and where and how and why, you know, can the finances happen? What connections do you have? What possibilities are out there? And, you know, and then going down that whole line of thinking. You know, for us, it's not like we needed a building. You know, we weren't needing storefront if we were, you know, because I mean, a lot there's a movement, you know, here in the United States for church planting, so that is that wasn't a factor. But I don't know. These are all questions that I would definitely ask them to think about, consider, and coach them through, just to help them think through some of those things.
What is ministry? If you were to put it into a few words, what makes something ministry and not just a business, not just a hobby? What is ministry?
Well, our kids have a egg ministry. We started out, my parents gave the kids money for Christmas one year, and we they decided, the kids had a meeting, they decided to invest the money into a chicken egg business. And so they deliver chicken eggs to the neighbors once a week. And we got the word out that we were doing this, and several neighbors signed up. And it began with the kids taking a trike around the neighborhood on their bikes and scooters and everything. And what they do is they ended up visiting with each of the neighbors as they went around. They give them more than just eggs. They gave them fellowship and time and asked if they needed anything. And before too long, we were praying, with the people and praying for the, sickness and job concerns and things like that. And the Lord was answering prayer like crazy. And it's really exciting. And so the ministry has been going on for 2 years now, and it takes a good while to deliver those eggs. It's not like you just drop them at the door and run. But when you want to invest in someone's life and care about them for the glory of God, it sometimes takes a little time. And so you can certainly do ministry wherever the Lord has you, whether it be in your job or in, a simple farming business like this. We've seen God at work, and the key, I think, is to give the glory back to God for everything, and using your time and your energy and your strength and your talents and your gifts for His service. And that's a ministry. Was that was a lot more than a few words.
No, but what you've described though is it's a big part of ministry, especially in our current culture, in the way we need to behave. This is not a Christian culture anymore. Ministry is missional. And that's exactly what you described is ministry today is not, it's not just serving people through the church, it's serving people in your community.
Well, and taking the time, I think people are so hurried and running from here to there to everywhere that they're not taking the time to really invest in relationships and loving your neighbors. And so we really have intentionally sought to love our neighbors, love the people that God has put in our path, and even the children, that come to my door, always being able to greet them with a smile and usually cookies or something. But in the end, we're able to have faith conversations, and hopefully, it's all in the Lord's timing what He does with things. But we've seen God, the light and the fruit from the time invested in people's lives and really loving and caring for them.
And that's something, I mean, I saw it just as we're doing this recording. Someone came to your door and said, "Guess what? I accepted Christ today." That means that, your connection to the community as such is who do they come to when they do this? They come and tell you.
It's exciting. It is. It's a blessing.
What is your favorite Bible verse?
My favorite one that I'm leaning on, this is a verse that God gave me, sort of, and when we started Homes Devoted or was about to take that leap, and it's Ephesians 3:20. Now to him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that works in us, to him be the glory. And that's God gave me that verse. What, he's going to do more than we can even imagine, more than we can think, and he has, and it's been awesome to see.
I think mine, it's on the wall right there, but it's Psalm 27. It's the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. And I think it's just because sometimes I get fearful or afraid, and I just am reminded by that verse to look to the Lord, and He'll give me the strength. He'll bring light to my path, so I don't have to be afraid.
If someone wants to know more about Homes Devoted,
Okay.
where do they look? Where would they find more information about this ministry?
Well, homesdevoted.com. The website that we have has got definitely resources and articles, videos to help parents, to help grandparents, and even churches. So there are offerings, if you will, for churches are all on there as well. The partnerships, the workshops, the descriptions of all that.
So if they wanted to find out how to be involved with supporting Homes Devoted, that information is also there on homesdevoted.com.
Yes. Yeah.
So as we wrap up this discussion, is there anything else you would want people to know about Homes Devoted? And is there anything that you just want them to be thinking about in general?
I think the key is that we don't have to do it perfectly, that God's grace and His mercy is sufficient, and it's not really, the message can get confused. Like if we do A and B, then we'll get C, and that's not the way it is. But our responsibility as parents is to obey the Lord and be faithful to Him who has given us the command to train our children up in the Lord and teach them diligently and to talk about it when we lie down and when we get up and when we walk along the road. These are commands that have been given to us. Our responsibility is to be faithful to God and to do what He's asked us to do. The results are in His hand. And so when we can trust Him with our children and we give them over to Him, we don't have that pressure like, oh, I did something wrong and therefore they're ruined. They are, and there's been many children who have come from homes like both Jonathan and I were raised in homes where there wasn't the intentional, authentic living out of the word in our home, but yet God's grace was sufficient for us. And so I really want to clarify that, but our responsibility is really to be faithful to Him and to do our part so that when we stand before Him, we don't have the regrets that we didn't do our best to obey God and to disciple our children.
We've got to remember the greatest goal, that it is not that our kids have a great GPA, but that but that they love a great God. And when we keep that as a vision, whether we're a family pastor, youth pastor, children's pastor, I mean, that's ultimately the greatest goal for the parents, for the kids that we're working with. And to keep that in the forefront of the parents of these kids, so that the next generation will know.
Well, Jonathan, Carrie, I want to thank you for joining me on this episode of Ministry Profiles. If anyone wants to find out more about your ministry, they can go to homesdevoted.com. You can also find more links and photos over on our website, ministryprofiles.com/homesdevoted. Thank you for being willing to sit down and share your living room with me, and I hope others can connect with you and support you and find ways to inspire their own churches and their own families to become a home devoted.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks. Thank you. Appreciate it.
While this interview has come to an end, the profile is only getting started. I encourage you to leave comments for the team and our guests at ministryprofiles.org. You can use our SpeakPipe connection on the website to leave an audio message. If you speak clearly enough and mention your name, I might even feature you in an upcoming episode. Also, please leave comments and ratings on iTunes. The more you do, the more you help others discover this podcast. Finally, Ministry Profiles is intended to be a team effort. We are always looking for others to take part in the interviews and photography. Use the contact page to let me know if you want to join in. This episode is over. Now get out there and serve. This is Jonathan Dennison. Shalom, y'all.